Welcome to Brand Plus Brand. This is a podcast created by me. My name is Julie Turkel, and I'm a licensing agent that has been in business for 20 years of working mostly with creatives and designers and media brands. And this podcast is for anyone who wants to learn about licensing from the perspective of a licensing agent who's been in the business for 20 years. So I've definitely have a whole years and years of experience and knowledge starting out my career working at Nickelodeon. And again, as I said, for the past 20 years, I've been running my own licensing agency. And, you know, it's been quite a ride and very rewarding. So, you know, I hope that if you're listening for the first time, welcome. And if you are a regular listener, thank you. I hope that you find the support and information that you need by listening to the podcast. So today's topic, I want to talk about influencers. I have been wanting to talk about this topic for a while, not quite sure exactly what I want to say about it, but I definitely like have a lot of conversations with people on the side about influencers that are crossing over into licensing and building product lines. Some of their efforts have been questioned, and I just did an interview with Mo Assist, which is a platform created by an influencer named Danielle Bernstein, and she created it for other influencers. It's a platform that helps them with their project management and their business. And I did an interview with them recently for their blog about, you know, some advice that I have for influencers that are looking to get into licensing. And I thought this is a great time for me to put out my message about this topic. So I just want to, in this podcast episode, share some observations and kind of like address some of the questions and comments that I get about influencers that are doing licensing or building branded product lines. And then obviously I have a lot of experience working with creatives and working with media brands. And I just wanted to offer some advice and again, support for anybody who's listening to this that is in the category of an influencer or aspiring to be one and is interested in getting into licensing. So I'm going to just share some observations and advice. I'm going to start with the topic of, you know, choosing partners and figuring out, you know, if you are an influencer and you've built up a following and people love you and aspire to dress like you or do things like you, cook like you, and you think it's a great idea for you to enter into the world of licensing and develop your own branded products, where do you start? How do you choose a partner? How do you choose those products? You know, it may seem like a no-brainer, but it's actually not as simple as you think because, and I remember a few years back, I was in conversations with a big influencer, somebody a big influencer in the space who had a large following personally and also had a blog that was very popular. And I remember sitting down with her. She'd approached me about doing licensing, and I sat down with her for the first time, and the first thing that came out of her mouth was, "I don't think you understand. I'm a media company. I run a media company. I'm not an influencer. I'm not a fashion person. I'm a media company." And I said, "Yeah, I really do understand that because I come from the media business, and I understand by that statement what she meant by it is that it's not so cut and dry because, you know, if you are an influencer, your main source of revenue is sponsorships and advertising revenue that comes from you creating this content off of promoting other people's brands and products and services. So it's not so easy to choose how to enter into a category where basically you might set yourself up to compete with the very people that pay you for what you're doing now. So figuring out a product plan and a strategy is something that I have a lot of experience with, not only working with, I've had, you know, celebrity clients or people in the public eye, let's put it that way. And I came from Nickelodeon, where this issue of the friction between licensing and advertising was top of mind pretty much every single day, because, you know, oftentimes we're in a situation where you would say, for instance, want to find a toy partner, but you've got three or four different toy companies that are major advertisers, or actually at that time, probably I would say two companies, you know, Mattel and Hasbro, that were, Mattel and Hasbro, which were separate at the time. And so who do you choose? You know, they're both paying Nickelodeon significant amount of money in ad revenue. How do you make a choice between the two and still, you know, retain them both as advertisers? There's also, you know, in the example of like my experience working at Nickelodeon, oftentimes what is, you know, what the mouth that feeds you is not necessarily what's best for your audience. So, you know, an example of that was when we decided to enter into the food category, obviously, having a partnership and doing like Rugrats macaroni and cheese with Kraft makes perfect sense, you know, with Kraft being a major advertiser on Nickelodeon and mac and cheese being such a popular thing for kids to eat. And so if you put their, you know, you do the character shapes, it's like, it's a huge business and a no-brainer. But, you know, figuring out whether it makes sense to work with a company like Kraft or whether you wanted to go with a more organic company that maybe doesn't advertise on your network. There were a lot of discussions that went on for a very long time about whether to do sugary snacks, whether sugary cereals with General Mills and Kellogg's made sense, or whether it wasn't something we wanted to promote to young children because of the health impact on them. So, you know, it needs to be weighed very carefully. Now, you know, I'm thinking mostly about fashion influencers when I'm thinking about this topic, because, you know, one of the benefits of working, one of the benefits of licensing a brand, an influencer brand, is how much you know your follower, how much information you have on them, you know, where they live, how old they are, what price you can ask, you can have the opportunity to ask them questions and get a sense of price points that they might be willing to pay for something, or quality and the style they like. And that's one of the main benefits. But, you know, finding, you know, well, in licensing, you make the most money going to the mass market, and, you know, or even department stores. And, you know, you have to be very careful about who you might choose as a partner, what kind of quality their product is, and the price points, because you don't want to alienate your followers. You want to make it accessible to them. And that's not always going to be doable in a way that feels authentic to your brand. So I guess, you know, one example I'm thinking of when I'm saying this is, you know, there's the Ariel Charnas of Something Navy who had the partnership with Nordstrom. Now that's actually not low end at all. But it's a lower price point and a quality level that is not consistent with what she wears. And so, you know, I'm not saying whether this was right or wrong, but an influencer who comes out with a branded product line and doesn't actually wear the products doesn't seem as authentic. And that sort of negates the idea of influencers having product lines, because the whole reason why people come to them for advertisement is that it looks very seamless and organic. And once you enter into the idea of you having your own, you know, you can choose to wear your coat every single day in the winter because you've got five different styles and they're all existing on the shelves and you're not wearing them. It does have an impact, I think, in my opinion, or it's something to really, really consider when you're thinking about crossing over into products. And in contrast to that, I was thinking a lot about, I just posted like a post on my feed with featuring Danielle Bernstein and her swimwear line and her overalls. And I think it was really smart. So this was an influencer who decided to go with a more high-end partner for swimwear, Anya. And, you know, it's possible that there were a lot of people who follow her who felt that the price point of her swimwear is too high for them. But at least it's a narrow enough category done very well. Somebody can save up for that. Or at least you're in this position where the influence, where you're wearing your own products, they're of a certain quality, and they really reflect your taste level and are, you know, are reflective of brand building. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is that I think if you're, my advice, if you're an influencer and you're considering developing your own products, my advice would be to definitely try license, definitely work with some licensing partners, because you'll get some phenomenal experience and knowledge from it. And I would, I'm in favor, this is my personal preference. I'm in favor of choosing to go narrow with a category and choosing maybe one category that you feel you can do really, really well versus these, you know, comprehensive product lines, where you're basically a shop within shop at it, you know, with your partner, or, you know, whole trying to branch out and become a fashion designer overnight versus trying to design swimwear and get some really good experience and create a good quality swimwear collection that could, you could refresh over and over again, take that knowledge and experience and bring it to a broader mass level and have both your high end swim and your lower end swim. You know, it's, I would apply that level of strategy and patience if I was in a position where I had, you know, a million or million plus followers. That seems smart to me. Yeah. So that's my thought about choosing your partners and choosing your products wisely in light of the fact that you're a media brand and you've got a lot of constituencies to satisfy as you enter into licensing. So the next topic I want to talk about is, people ask me all the time, well, or I hear criticisms, I read comments where people say, well, they're not actually a designer, so what gives them the right and the credibility to have their own product line when there are so many talented designers out there that need to be promoted? So, you know, this is, I hear this all the time, and there's also a lot of celebrities out there that have product lines that aren't designers, and there are brands that have product lines that aren't designers. And the fact of the matter is that people really like and trust brands. And so it's kind of, again, a no-brainer when you have a lot of eyeballs on you to be, you know, to have that opportunity to become a brand over somebody who's starting from scratch and, you know, bootstrapping it all the way. And it may not be fair, but it's just how the world works and how licensing works is, you know, a lot of the decision making comes down to the primary purpose of licensing being, you know, marketing. It's really was something that was born out of marketing and not so much a born out of revenue. It happens to be one of the few marketing tools that is concretely revenue generating. By that, I mean, if you place an ad, it's hard to know what the impact of that ad is on the sales of a product. Whereas if you look at licensing as a marketing function and you put your brand on a product, you know very measurably how well that advertising performed because you have product sales and royalties as a result of it. So, you know, looking at it that way, it's just a lot of partners that choose to work with influencers over other designer brands that they could potentially work with that don't have as much influence. They're really looking at it from a marketing perspective, and these partners typically have teams in-house that can design for the influencer. And, you know, again, the influencer also usually has a distinct style and knowledge about what they like and how what they like intersects with what their followers might like. So they have a lot of information, really helpful visual information to work with, and could probably design something based off of that. But, you know, when you're choosing a partner, if you are an influencer and you are in this position, you know, you have to ask some questions about what kind of resources and product development teams your partner has and what their vision is for you. And, you know, my advice would be also to be, you know, designate somebody on your team. And ultimately, if this becomes a bigger part of your business, have a design team that can really help define what your brand is all about, visually and creatively and product-wise. You know, I don't mean to focus so much on fashion when in this particular episode, but it really is the thing that I am thinking of most when it comes to this. And, you know, the only example that's coming to my mind where this may not be an issue or even anything to think about would be somebody like Ojoy for Target. And she's not necessarily, Joy Cho was a graphic designer. And so obviously she knows how to design graphics, packaging and patterns and colors, and has her own style because she's a designer and has her own in-house inherent capabilities. But she's not necessarily an influencer. She just had built a big following. I guess she was a blogger. I guess you could call that an influencer. So if you're in that really envious position where you actually already have a design team and like your brand has that kind of voice built into what you're doing already as an influencer, then you're way ahead of the game. And I guess maybe if I had any advice for somebody who's thinking about this is to really think about, you know, if you do have those aspirations, think about your brand name, think about your logo, think about what you think the product would look like on a shelf or the hang tags, use signature colors, think about a signature style that you can own, some kind of, whether you love bandanas or, you know, I don't even know, like, I guess I'm also thinking about Man Repeller and that like lobster coming out of the ear. I don't know how successful that was, but, you know, if you, the more distinctive your style is and signature to you, the better. But really just also, this is a situation where you can really rely on your partner in the early days to kind of lead you in a certain direction, use the data that you have and the strength of the partner that you have to kind of find the intersection between what's trending, what looks like you, and what you think your followers would really love based on the information you have about likes on your photos and things like that and the content you're putting out. And I think this is a really good natural segue into a challenge and something that I'm observing a lot in licensing with influencers is this whole criticism about and this sort of micro analysis of influencers who have knocked off other brands that they've promoted and are getting, you know, accused of copying and not promoting the designers that are giving them free products. And it's definitely a thing. There was a situation recently with Danielle Bernstein of We Wore What, and she wanted to come out with a mask for, you know, for all of us who need masks right now, that had a chain. And I think there are a lot of different designers that make masks with chains, but there was this one in particular where she asked for them to, I think they actually solicited her to send her products. And she said, yeah, I'd like your products, but I want to let you know that I'm coming out with a mask that has a chain myself. Now, I have no knowledge insider information on that situation, but it could have been a knockoff or it could have been just a perfect storm of events and miscommunications about this. But she ended up having to pull her mask with a chain because there's a watchdog Instagram account called Diet Prada. And there's all kinds, you know, in today's world, when somebody sees you doing something wrong, they can really, come after you about it. And it becomes, you know, kind of a public, information that people can see and everybody starts weighing in on who's right, who's wrong. And it can get very ugly from what I've observed. And in my experience in working with even designers who design, it is extremely common to knock off other designs. It is almost the basis of all design is derivative. And I used to have conversations with a client who was a very, very, very prolific designer about how derivative everything is. The difference between then and now is that when you knock somebody off or when you are inspired by somebody's designs, whoever it may be, we used to not have a forum in social media where people can call you out and cancel you as a result of it. And I think that's really the only difference between designing then and designing now. Being a media brand, being a celebrity, being an influencer then and now would be that people can actually form these judgments, see and air their grievances in a very public way. And but the actual act of being inspired by, influenced by, or if you want to put it very negatively, knocking off other brands, it's been around for a really long time and it will continue to happen. So I guess if I had any advice, I would say be really careful here. Ask yourself those questions about, do you think it's worth it? Keep good notes. Think about how you can make things really, really original while still being influenced by things that you see. And maybe finding some instances where you say to yourself, listen, I know I have a lot of ability to sell this product, but if there are a few brands that you really love that you want to get behind and maybe do a collab with or promote, you know, I think it creates a lot of goodwill for you to consider situations where you where it might be better better for the greater good of everyone for you to do it that way versus do it under your own brand. So again, I think it almost kind of dovetails with my first point about just being very careful about your product strategy and really trying to find out if there are certain things, designs, and certain categories that you can own in a way that's very original that doesn't conflict with the greater good of your overall business. Same thing goes for when you get inspired by things that you see or you your look becomes associated with things that you wear that were designed by other brands that you love. So, you know, I guess my last, I hope this advice, this is sort of the main things that I wanted to say in this episode, but I kind of wanted to end it with some basics of, you know, if you are an influencer and you want to get into licensing, what is it that you need to do? What do you need to own? And what do you need to have? Well, you know, at the influencer part, that's all on you. So, you know, cultivate your following and build a community and really get to know them, because I think that's a huge asset for you as well as the actual eyeballs that are on you. I'm sure this is not new information, but you need to own your trademark, and you know, you might want to consider your name vis-a-vis some other name like Kiara versus the Blonde Salad and We Wore What versus Danielle Bernstein. I think it's great when you have two names. I think creates an opportunity for you to satisfy different products at different price points. But either way, just give some careful consideration to how you want to brand yourself and make sure you file your trademarks and file your trademark generally and file it in categories where you think you really will have the most influence and most potential in licensing. On the design side, I think I've already given some thoughts on that, but you know, you may want to consider when you're hiring people to, you know, to find somebody who's a really good graphic designer or has some other design capabilities to help you figure out how you're going to start thinking about what your product might look like if you were a subset, if you had your signature colors, if you did pattern, you know, what do you like, and start to build kind of like a mood board around that and do that regularly. With you and somebody on your team, and be intentional about it. If you have your eye on getting into licensing, be intentional about what you post and be intentional. Keep that in mind. Study what other people in your field have done, and study what celebrities have done, and kind of pick, like, take what you like and leave the rest, I guess is a great way to put it. I think you're going to need a therapist too, because it sounds like, based on what I've observed, you're going to get a lot of backlash and criticism, and you know, that's possibly avoidable, but I think it's largely unavoidable. So, you know, definitely have support in terms of your support group, friends, a good therapist. I'm sure that's already on your radar screen if you're in the public eye in any kind of way. And I think that's it for this episode. And hopefully, again, hopefully you got the support and the information and advice that you're looking for. And I would love for you to, what is it? Leave a review of this podcast or send me messages. Follow me at I am Julie Turkell. Hi, it's Julie here, and thank you so much for listening. Before you go, I have a couple of things I'd love to share with you. The first being that if you're interested in becoming a licensing expert yourself, I am relaunching the Brand Plus Brand class with a little bit of updated content from last year's class, and it will be available September 17th. So please follow me on Instagram or go to my website, Julie Turkell, and get on the email list, and you'll find out more about Brand Plus Brand, the class, when it launches. I also, if you go to my website, julieturkell.com, I do strategy consultations and paid consultations. I offer that service for those of you who have very specific questions about licensing, about your strategy, about deals you may be negotiating, about your potential to get into licensing, or whether you want to hire a licensing agent. I can answer those questions for you if you hit book a consult and you can schedule time with me. So I love helping you, and I'd love to continue to help you on a much more one-on-one specific level if that interests you. And again, thank you so much for listening.